Hello, this is Jamie Peterson with the Herald and Review for Wednesday, March 11th, 2020. We'll start our reading on the front page, Coronavirus in Illinois, out of Springfield. Pritzker frustrated with feds. State confirms its first COVID-19 cases outside Cook County. Governor J.B. Pritzker expressed frustration with the federal government's response to the spread of coronavirus Tuesday, as the state confirmed its first cases outside of Cook County. "We have not received enough tests," the Chicago Democrat said. The state's confirmed infection tally hit 19 on Tuesday, but the governor said the state would like to be able to test any person who shows symptoms or wants to be tested. He said federal officials have not kept their word. "We've been told now for days and days and days, indeed weeks, I would argue, that there are commercial labs that would be coming online," he said. "I was just told today commercial labs would be coming online within days. Once again, I've been told the same thing again. We haven't seen it." The only places able to test for COVID-19 right now are the three state-run labs in Chicago, Springfield, and Carbondale. State and Chicago public health officials reported 8 new cases Tuesday, including a woman in her 60s from west suburban Kane County and a teenage male from McHenry County northwest of Chicago. Neither had traveled to an area affected by COVID-19, nor had any connection to someone previously diagnosed. The governor raised questions about whether large-scale gatherings, such as the city's upcoming St. Patrick's Day celebrations, can go ahead. Given the concerns about the possibility of viral transmission at large gatherings, Pritzker said government officials and organizers of this week's popular St. Patrick's Day celebration in Chicago are discussing its fate. An announcement was expected. "As you saw, Boston and Dublin have both canceled their St. Patrick's Day celebrations," Pritzker said. "I want to keep people safe, and I think we've got to follow the guidance that medical experts give us." The new coronavirus that has sickened thousands across the globe causes only mild or moderate symptoms such as fever and cough for most people. For some, especially older adults and people with existing health problems, it can cause more severe illness, including pneumonia, and can sometimes be fatal. The vast majority of people recover. According to the World Health Organization, people with mild illness recover in 2 weeks, while those with more severe illness may take 3 to 6 weeks. In mainland China, where the virus first exploded, more than 80,000 people have been diagnosed and more than 58,000 have so far recovered. "As anticipated, we have reached the point where we are likely to see additional cases, reflecting additional spread within the communities each day forward," Pritzker said. The other new cases were all reported in Cook County, including a male in his 70s, a woman in her 60s, a woman and a man in their 40s, and two Chicago residents, men in their 40s. Public health officials are investigating the travel history of all the new cases as well as any contacts with a known case, said Dr. Ngozi Ejike, the state public health director. "All the new cases are in isolation, either at home or in a hospital, and are doing well." Also on the front page, local news from Decatur by Garrett Kirsten. Positive response. Area residents delight in opening of fire station number 5. Decatur's new fire station number 5 is operational, and some area residents couldn't be happier. "We need one this way," said Stephen Stanley, 68, a resident on Green Ridge Drive, making reference to all the stores popping up in the area and the nearby schools. Stanley was among the crowd on hand Tuesday morning for a ribbon-cutting ceremony to mark the opening of the station along West Mound Road that will provide service to the city's north end. Another resident, 44-year-old Nikki Fenderson, shared similar sentiments. "It gives me a peace of mind to know that I have a fire station so close to my house in case of an emergency," said Fenderson, who lives a little over a half a mile from the station on Sunderland Drive. She attended the event with her 5-year-old son, Gavin. Fenderson took special note of the kitchen during a tour of the 5,450-square-foot facility. "I love the modern look of it," she said. "I want that in my house." State Representative Sue Scherer, Democrat, Decatur, addressed the crowd before the ribbon was cut, saying she was happy to be there as a resident of Decatur's North End. "I'm just going to knock on wood that they never actually have to come to my house," she said. "Something really struck me," Scherer said. "This is a Tuesday morning. The weather's not great, but look at how many of our citizens came out just to support their local fire station. That really impressed me, because I go to some of these that aren't well attended." The Decatur City Council approved construction of the $2.7 million facility in May 2018. The goal was to improve response times in the city's north end by building a new facility about a mile north of the former station at 225 East Christine Drive, which was built in 1962. The new fire station number 5 is part of an $8.5 million effort to build 3 new stations and renovate 4 existing ones. The project is being funded through the issuance of bonds that will be paid back at the cost of about $400,000 a year over the next 20 years. New facilities also are planned for Fire Station 3 in Fairview Park and Fire Station 7 at Decatur Airport. The new facility on Mound Road includes 6 private sleeping quarters, each equipped with cabinets to store personal belongings. Safety measures in the building include ventilation systems for adequate air quality where the vehicles are kept. There are 2 complete bathrooms, which means male and female firefighters have their respective amenities as well. The building was designed to make response time a priority, Fire Chief Jeff Abbott said. It's designed so whether you're in the sleeping cubicles or you're in the main area, it all funnels back to that door there, which is to get them out to the apparatus as quick as possible, he said. The facility also has a separate room for gear storage, and the laundry room is located nearby, so dirty gear would not have to get dragged through the building, Abbott said. The facility's basement serves as an exercise area. In the old building, exercise equipment was kept in the same room as the fire truck and gear. It's obviously very important for firefighters to be physically fit, Abbott said, explaining that a slanted floor where the truck is kept is designed to drain water, which isn't ideal for exercise equipment. When you spend a third of your life in the same building, the idea that you can work out and increase your physical fitness while you're at work during your downtime, I think it's perfect. The city intends to sell the building that was vacated, Abbott said. It's not ready to be sold yet, but I'm sure in the next couple of weeks to a month it'll go up on the market, Abbott said. Also on the front page, out of Urbana, Belted Kingfisher, new mascot or is it for the birds? Student's illustration of winged predator passes advisory stage. The idea came to Spencer Holsey in a doodle. During a physics discussion at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, she idly sketched out a belted kingfisher, a blue and orange bird she saw many times while fishing on her family's farm outside Kinmundy in south-central Illinois. She was aware of the drama her school had endured since retiring Chief Illiniwek, the American Indian symbol the NCAA deemed to be hostile and abusive. While many still pine for the chief's return, others have suggested breaking from the past with a new mascot. The effort, however, hasn't made much headway. An advisory panel in 2018 suggested the school consider adopting an official mascot, but little has happened since then. Last year, a student referendum that sought to fill that role with a cheekily named Alma Otter lost by 300 votes. But the kingfisher just might have a different fate. After Holsey fleshed out her doodle and presented it to the Illinois student government, the organization decided to put it to a campus-wide vote. This week, the proposal passed by 625 votes out of about 7,800 votes cast. The vote was merely advisory. A spokeswoman for Chancellor Robert Jones told the News Gazette that the vote results will be shared with university officials and the Board of Trustees, but there are no plans to adopt a mascot at this time. Halsey said she has already received blowback from alumni worried that a new mascot would scuttle any chance that Chief Illiniwek might come back. One confused correspondent, she said, referred to her as a uninformed millennial. I'm technically Gen Z, she said. She said the kingfisher could help to heal wounds still raw on the campus. I think a mascot would allow us to have the same experience at games that other schools get to have, she said. We can see a kingfisher dunking a basketball, or we can take pictures with it. We can have something to interact with. Susan Zoe, Speaker of the Senate for the Illinois Student Government, an organization that has endorsed the idea of a new mascot, helped get the kingfisher on the student ballot. She said the bird's crisp graphic design and uniqueness as a mascot gave it an edge over Alma Otter, which started as a jokey meme. It's a pretty intimidating predatory bird, Zoe said. It hunts by beating its prey against a rock and swallowing it whole. The concept was more than enough to carry the vote. The kingfisher would also be the lone Big Ten mascot to be overtly female. The male of the species is blue and gray, while the female is blue and orange. And now election news from the front page. Biden wins Michigan, deals blow to Sanders. From the Associated Press. Joe Biden won Michigan's Democratic primary on Tuesday, seizing a key battleground state that helped propel Bernie Sanders' insurgent candidacy 4 years ago. The former vice president's victory in Michigan, as well as Missouri and Mississippi, dealt a serious blow to Sanders, who was urgently seeking to jumpstart his flagging campaign. Sanders could still get a boost from Idaho, North Dakota, or Washington State, but fewer delegates were at stake than in Mississippi, Missouri, and Michigan, where Biden's decisive performance again showed his strength with working-class voters and African Americans, who are vital to winning the Democratic nomination. It's a dramatic reversal of fortune for Biden, whose campaign appeared on the brink of collapse just 2 weeks ago. Sanders opened the nomination process with strong showings in Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada, but Biden rebounded in South Carolina and built on that success with a surprise Super Tuesday rout last week. Sanders had been hoping to pull off a victory in Michigan, where his win 4 years ago lent much-needed credibility to his 2016 primary challenge of Hillary Clinton. The state is also vitally important since President Donald Trump's win there was so narrow 4 years ago that Democrats are desperate to show they have the strength to flip it back. Even as the contours of the race took shape, however, the campaigns faced new uncertainty amid fears of the spreading coronavirus. Sanders and Biden both abruptly canceled public events in Ohio that were scheduled for Tuesday night. Sanders' campaign said all future events would be decided on a case-by-case basis, while Biden called off a scheduled upcoming stop in Florida. The Democratic National Committee also said that Sunday's debate between Sanders and Biden would be conducted without an audience. As soon as polls closed in Mississippi and Missouri at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, the Associated Press declared Biden the winner in both states' Democratic presidential primaries. The AP called Biden the winner over Sanders, even though state officials had yet to release any results from Tuesday's election. The news agency did so based on results from AP VoteCast, its wide-ranging survey of the American electorate. That election research captures the views of voters on whom they vote for and why. Tuesday marked the first time voters weighed in on the primary since it effectively narrowed to a two-person race between Sanders and Biden. It showed that Sanders had yet to really broaden his appeal among African Americans after earlier setbacks in the South on Super Tuesday. Biden, meanwhile, kept up momentum after a dominant South Carolina victory. With 125 delegates at stake, Michigan got most of the attention Tuesday. Trump won the state by only about 10,000 votes during the general election in 2016, his closest margin of victory between it, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, the three states that gave Trump the edge in the Electoral College after Clinton won the popular vote. Biden is hoping his showing can convince voters he's the candidate who can win Michigan back for his party against Trump. Sanders, who has vowed not to drop out regardless of Tuesday's results, may be unable to catch Biden and perhaps only be left trying to deny him an outright delegate win ahead of the Democratic National Convention this summer in Milwaukee. AP VoteCast survey showed Biden leading among both men and women, as well as among both white voters and African-American voters. Sanders had predicted victory in Michigan and scrapped a scheduled Mississippi stop to spend more time there. Biden went there less frequently, but sought late-breaking support there and toured an auto plant in Detroit on Tuesday. "You're the best damn workers in the world," Biden shouted through a megaphone at the auto plant as workers in hard hats chanted, "Joe, Joe." Biden now frequently ticks off the names of six former presidential rivals who have endorsed him just in the past week, saying he is the candidate they think can win. The former vice president has campaigned in recent days with two of them, Senators Cory Booker and Kamala Harris, and appeared with Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. All three have been mentioned as possible vice presidential picks if Biden wins the nomination. And now local and state news. Out of Decatur by Allison Petty. Facebook messages reveal burglary. Police say an unrelated investigation by the DeWitt County Sheriff's Office revealed a 32-year-old man's involvement in the burglary of a former Decatur police officer's garage. In a sworn affidavit, police said a Decatur detective was contacted by the Sheriff's Office on February 11. Cell phone data that was part of a different investigation had uncovered a Facebook conversation between a 30-year-old man and a 29-year-old woman. The two mentioned that a third person, the 32-year-old man, had broken into a cop's garage. The conversation also indicated that the victim was the stepfather of the 30-year-old man, the affidavit said. Decatur police contacted the victim, who had formerly worked for the police department. He said a rental property he owned on South Nelson Boulevard had been burglarized while he was out of town, the affidavit said. Items taken included an electric hedge trimmer, gas-powered pole saw, and air compressor. Police on March 4 interviewed the 32-year-old man, who was incarcerated on a separate burglary charge. He acknowledged breaking into the garage with the younger man, the affidavit said. He remained in Macon County Jail on Tuesday with a bail set at $80,000, meaning he must post $8,000 bond to be released. The 30-year-old man was arrested earlier Monday by the Macon County Sheriff's Office on an unrelated charge. Sergeant Chris Copeland said Tuesday afternoon that the investigation is continuing. Also out of Decatur by Valerie Wells. Richland Community College, 2.2% rise in tuition, okayed. $3 per credit hour, increase, toughest pill to swallow for trustee. Tuition at Richland Community College will rise by 2.2% next year, or $3 per credit hour. The Richland Board of Trustees approved the increase at their meeting on Tuesday, though members expressed reluctance. The cost per credit hour will now be $139 for in-state students. This is the only one of the three legs of the stool where the people it affects have no say-so, said Trustee Dale Coley. We've got to hammer the students. A few years ago, tuition was under $100 a credit hour. I understand the need to do increasing, but I wish we could stop hammering people. It's still the toughest pill to swallow for me as a board member. The three legs of the stool, said Vice President of Finance and Administration Greg Florian, are state funding, property taxes, and tuition. State funding has not only not increased, it's decreased from the 2015 levels, he said. Governor J.B. Pritzker's proposed budget calls for the same level of funding for the 2021 fiscal year, which begins July 1st, unless voters approve the progressive income tax hike. This would still only increase Richland's funding by about 5%, or around $80,000 a year, he said. Every time you see a state representative, remind them about community colleges, said Richland President Cristobal Valdez. Florian said Richland's tuition per credit hour is roughly equal to other colleges in the area, even with the increase. State funding for Richland is only about $1.8 million a year now, Florian said. In other business, the board approved Valdez's first raise since he joined the college in 2017, a 2.5% increase in his base salary to $224,987.50 per year, with a one-time performance bonus of $7,500. Both Coley and board chairman David Cooprider mentioned Valdez's success in increasing enrollment and retention of students at the college as marks of his positive impact on the college. I'm grateful to receive that, Valdez says, though that's not why I do this work. Two robbed at gunpoint, police seek suspects, by Allison Petty, out of Decatur. Police say two men who set up a deal through Facebook to sell cell phones were robbed at gunpoint when they met to complete the exchange. Sergeant Dan Wise said the victims, ages 18 and 20, met the prospective buyers around 5:15 p.m. Monday in the 900 block of East Main Street. One of the two male buyers displayed a gun and demanded that the victims turn over the items. Wise said the items taken included a purse, wallet, cash, and two phones. One of the suspects was described as a light-skinned black man in his 30s, about 6 feet tall, with tattoos on his face, Wise said. The other suspect was described as a black man in his 20s with darker skin and a medium build, also 6 feet tall. The Decatur Police Department provides a safe place for people to complete sales or trades arranged through sites like Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist. The Craigslist and e-commerce trade safe zone was created at the station, 707 South Side Drive, in 2015 in response to residents' concerns about safety during such transactions. The department is open 24 hours a day, but police encourage conducting transactions between business hours of 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Wise encouraged anyone who makes online sales to take advantage of the safe area. This type of thing is not as uncommon as you might hope to think it would be, he said. Over the years, I've had people travel from all kinds of places in central Illinois to come to Decatur to make these clandestine exchanges only to be victimized. No arrests have been made as of 12:30 a.m. Tuesday. Anyone with information should call Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. Police, guns, drugs found at residence, by Annalisa Trofimik, Decatur. Police said they arrested a 33-year-old man who told them he was selling the drugs found in his residence to take care of his children. A sworn affidavit said Decatur police officers executed a search warrant Monday at the man's home in the 400 block of North 35th Street. The man told them that there was cannabis and cocaine in the residence and that he sold the drugs to take care of his two children, according to the affidavit. Officers found a plastic bag which contained 26 grams of a white powdery substance that later tested positive for cocaine. They also found a Ruger SR-45 semi-automatic handgun and two loaded magazines, as well as $9,000 in cash, the affidavit said. The man is not allowed to own a firearm because he is a convicted felon. The suspect is being held at Macon County Jail with bail set at $300,000, meaning he would need to post $30,000 to bond out. He faces preliminary charges of manufacturing, delivering of more than 15 grams of cocaine, and possession of a weapon by a felon. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. Woman accused of biting husband faces battery charge by Tony Reed, out of Decatur. Police say a 55-year-old Decatur woman who bit her husband so badly he needed medical treatment, plus urinated and spit on him, was arrested Sunday night and booked on a preliminary charge of domestic battery. A sworn affidavit from Decatur Police Officer Scott Markies said he was called to the couple's home on Jamar Trail to find the 64-year-old husband with blood on both forearms and an apparent bite mark to his left forearm. The husband told police his wife was highly intoxicated and had assaulted him when he tried to calm her down. She bit him, hit him with a purse, urinated on him, and spit on him, Markies added. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state attorney's office. The woman remained held in the Macon County Jail on Tuesday night in lieu of bail set at $5,000, which means she must post $500 to bail out. If she makes bail, she is ordered to stay away from her husband and their home. And now a column by the Herald and Review editorial board. Our view, more concern than Blago with pardons. Amid the outrage and bluster over one of President Trump's recent pardons and commutations, the true outrage over another has been shoved far to the background. Sure, former Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich flaunted his disregard for the law with, among other things, his attempt to sell Barack Obama's former Senate seat. Holding back cynicism about the system is difficult enough when ongoing examples of fraud batter us weekly. For years, we've been left to ponder the sound and language of Blagojevich discussing the value of Obama's Senate seat. We've made our position on Blagojevich's corruption clear. Considering all of the corruption that continues to wreak havoc on Illinois and its already despicable reputation, the last thing we need are decisions that empower those who already feel entitled to bend the law for their personal gain to take additional chances with the system. The commutation was Blagojevich's last chance. He'd exhausted his court appeals, including a pair in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. He was sentenced to 14 years and served 8. Blagojevich's commutation wasn't the only one given to the wealthy and well-known. We're not talking about the pardon for former San Francisco 49ers owner Eddie DeBartolo Jr. DeBartolo was convicted of bribery in acquiring a Louisiana gambling license. He was fined $1 million and lost control of the football team, but did not serve any jail time. No, easily in the same outrage league as Blagojevich was the pardon of Michael Milken. Even given the notoriety of Blagojevich, Milken's name was probably the one familiar to more Americans. Milken pleaded guilty to securities violations and crimes that cut across all areas of society. He became the face of the 1980s insider trading scandal. When Milken pleaded guilty in 1990, George H.W. Bush was president. Donald Trump had not yet filed the first of his four bankruptcies. The country had not yet suffered the 2008 financial crisis. He was originally sentenced to 10 years in prison and fined $600 million for his actions while in charge of the bond department at the Drexel Burnham Lambert Investment Bank. His sentence was reduced to 2 years after he began to cooperate with investigators. That's not a good sign for those hoping we as a country were at least making token efforts at making sure that regardless of the size of a person's wallet, we were all subject to similar brands of justice. Milken's pardon shows that there's always room for corruption and thievery to be forgiven, so long as the price is right. Out of Springfield, lawmaker seeking limits on solitary confinement. An Illinois man who spent 20 years in solitary confinement after being convicted of a minor theft and later driving without a license is now helping lead a push for legislation to limit the use of isolation in state prisons. Anthony Gay, who served 24 years in prison after being convicted as a young man, wept during a news conference in Chicago on Tuesday as he explained his experience. When the conditions of confinement were psychologically eating me inside out, instead of being removed from solitary confinement and offered adequate psychological counseling, I was prosecuted, given 100 years, and buried deeper in solitary confinement for symptoms of mental illness that solitary confinement created, he said. with Kay at the news conference was Representative LaShawn K. Ford, a Chicago Democrat and lead sponsor of House Bill 182. Ford said the bill will be known as the Anthony Gay Isolated Confinement Restriction Act. It would put strict limits on the use of solitary confinement for disciplinary purposes. Among other things, it would limit such confinement to no more than 10 consecutive days, 10 days in a 180-day period, and require that when inmates are out of their cells, they have access to activities, group therapy, medical treatment, meals, classes, job assignments, visits, and exercise. Oriana man faces sexual assault of a child charge. Out of Oriana by Tony Reed. An Oriana man told police he had been looking at pornography websites before squeezing the breast of a girl under 15 and touching her inner thigh, a sworn affidavit said. The child told school authorities on Monday, and the 37-year-old man was under arrest by 7:15 p.m. that day, booked on a preliminary charge of aggravated criminal sexual abuse. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state attorney's office. Writing in the affidavit, Sergeant Roger Pope Jr. with the Macon County Sheriff's Office said, under questioning, the man admitted to the assault and told police he would never do it again. Pope quotes the man as saying he'd been watching pornography and the girl did the right thing by telling her school what he had done to her. The child had described the assault in detail during an interview at Decatur's Child First Center. She said the man had come into her bedroom and assaulted her after laying down beside her, then assaulted her again. The child said he left but came back a third time and carried out another assault. She is quoted as telling police she pushed the man away to end the incident, and he later asked for a hug and apologized. A check of Macon County jail records Tuesday showed that the man remained in custody with bail set at $100,000, which means he must post $10,000 to bond out. If he makes bail, he is ordered not to have any contact with anyone under the age of 18. Police warn of St. Patrick's Day DUI crackdown by Tony Reed out of Decatur. Police want you to enjoy St. Patrick's Day on Tuesday, March 17th, but leave your car keys at home. Decatur Police Sergeant Steve Hagemeyer said those who don't will be targeted by stepped-up police patrols looking for impaired drivers and anyone not wearing seatbelts. Hagemeyer said the annual celebration of Irish ancestry shares an unfortunate parallel tradition. It remains one of the deadliest occasions of the year due to the number of impaired drivers hitting the road. Hagemeyer said if you are planning on drinking or using another impairing substance, arrange a ride, use public transport, or just sleep it off. We urge our community residents and visitors to enjoy St. Patrick's Day responsibly, Hagemeyer added. We'll be out in force to keep impaired drivers off the roads and help ensure that everyone makes it home safely. And he also warned that sober drivers should keep a wary eye out for impaired pedestrians who may not obey street signs and pedestrian signals. We'll pause now and take a break. This has been Jamie Peterson reading the Herald and Review for Wednesday, March 11th, 2020.